Welcome to Sex with Simmery. Frank, occasionally explicit edutainment on the most important topic of all. Sex with Simmery is not intended for children and is not safe for work unless your boss is particularly awesome. See more at sexwithsimmery.com.
So it's day two of the Feminist Porn Conference, and I am sitting here with Alex, Jean, and Trevor, who are attending the conference and are going to talk a little bit about what brought them to the conference today. Who's up first?
Hi, this is Trevor. Alex and I are enthusiasts and planning to be writers on porn. So we came here to get inspired, to get grounded in feminist, like the discourse on feminist porn, and to meet some of our favorite porn performers.
Yeah, we really wanted to see what people in the industry had to say, as well as academics. And I think one of the best things that we did yesterday was we went to this panel on like women of color in porn. And I don't know if you were there, but it was like a really great experience because at the end, the Q&A kind of, I don't want to say devolved, but it turned into more like a big group discussion about representation in feminist porn. And I really want to hear more of those kinds of discussions in the community going forward.
So I'm a sex educator in Halifax, Nova Scotia, and I do a little bit of work there with the harm reduction organization for sex workers there as well. And so part of what I do when I'm doing education in like rural Nova Scotia is push back a little bit against like the anti-porn folks there, which is interesting in sort of that rural context. And it's something I think we're seeing a bit of a backlash just in regards to what's happening in Canada right now with the Bedford decision on sex work and just like how that is wrapped up in anti-porn rhetoric. So like being here has always been really, I was here last year as well, and it just was very good and like a rejuvenating experience, I guess, to have to then go back and take what I learned back home.
So just really quickly, for somebody who may not be familiar with the Bedford situation, can you explain that, what that was?
Yeah, so the Bedford case was just went through the Supreme Court of Canada, and it was the laws that effectively prohibited prostitution in Canada. They didn't directly prohibit it, but all the actions around sex work. So they were recently all struck down as unconstitutional in Canada, which is really great, and the government has about a year to put in new laws. Which, given it's the Harper government, won't be great, but it's just like, you know, the next step. So,
So looking to today's sessions, are there any that are standing out that are particularly exciting for you that you're looking forward to the most?
Definitely. I'm really excited about the masochistic femininity and kink porn one that's happening later this afternoon. And also in the same room right after that is this talk on history, politics, and ethics of authenticity. And as Trevor and I have been exploring porn more, we've been thinking a lot about the role of like fake versus real and whether that's like a productive distinction at all. And like authenticity goes a lot into that, and it's something that people are constantly talking about in porn, whether or not, you know, the orgasms are real, the sex is real, what happens when the camera gets involved, etc. So hopefully those two will be really cool sessions to participate in.
I wish there was like five of me. They're all so great. But yeah, no, they're all really exciting. I'm really excited for Courtney's keynote and as well for that workshop and this one. And yeah.
We're also planning to go to the From Stonewall to Slut Walk, Sex Workers Unite. I think it's becoming increasingly obvious that like now is a time to support sex workers, and that's becoming a really visible, you know, point of discussion. And I'm eager to learn more about the history behind that, because I think it's only going to be more important moving forward.
So as far as like the people here, do you know people here already? Are you making friends? Do you hate everybody? What's the story?
That's what I loved most about last year, is that you just connect with folks on Twitter mostly, really. And given that there's a really amazing community of people in Halifax doing this kind of work, but it's pretty isolated, and so allowed us to connect with people from across the country. And especially when we're talking about this like work around raising awareness of the Bedford case, like I'm now working with people really across the country that are also doing that work. So it's been a great opportunity to like make connections and network with other folks.
Yeah, that's definitely true. I actually kind of got involved in this community being a Twitter user in the first place. So I was monitoring Twitter a lot yesterday and then retweeting stuff from the hashtag. And it's been great getting to know people via Twitter, and hopefully I'll get to meet more people from Twitter in real life today. And I got to meet Courtney Trouble yesterday, which they're a big hero of mine, so it was really special, even though I acted like a big dork. But, you know, it's kind of hard to avoid being starstruck here sometimes.
It's kind of been difficult to meet people here, but it's really interesting. On the one hand, you know, seeing people that you've known about and putting a face to the name, and also being around so many people and hearing them express themselves. I sometimes, like during the sessions, I stop taking notes because it's not really stuff you can take notes on. It's just a person expressing their point of view, and that's really important, and I don't think you can get that unless you're in a room with someone and all these people are, you know, the voices are blending together and creating something bigger than just any one idea or voice.
Well, thank you all so much for chatting with me today.
The session that I just attended was surprising to me. So it was from, it's called Sex Workers Unite, From Stonewall to Sled Walk, which is the name of the book by the presenter. And you can catch all of her stuff on Twitter at Horstorian, W-H-O-R-E, Horstorian, which I think is just a brilliant Twitter handle. Anyway, and she was wearing a shirt that said, "We are all whores," which, of course, I'm just immediately entranced by. So what was surprising about this for me was, you know, I thought I had, like, a basic idea of the queer activist movement. I thought I had a pretty good idea of, you know, the sex rights movement. And she was given a what ultimately to her seemed like a pretty basic overview, but I was learning the stuff right and left. So I knew a fair amount about Stonewall in as much as I could tell somebody the basics of what happened, that there was a gay club in New York that got busted, and then they, you know, fought back against the police to turn into a riot, and it really instigated a lot of activism that led to a much bigger gay and queer rights movement. Things I didn't know about were, like, the first person who threw a rock through a brick, Sylvia Rivera. She was a trans sex worker, Puerto Rican, been homeless since she was 13, drug user, and she was a big part of the queer rights movement, but she refused to hide her drug use or hide the fact she was a sex worker, and because the gay rights movement was trying so hard to be respectable to mainstream culture, they really ousted her. And in many ways, because of respectability politics, sex workers, drug users, lots of different types of people have been ousted from these rights movements for not being appropriate enough, for not conforming with patriarchal notions of what is acceptable behavior. I also was learning about the Compton's cafeteria riot, which I was just ashamed to admit I had not heard of. She, you know, asked if we had, and she was like, "You should be nodding your head." And I was like, "Oh, I'm the worst right now." But this was a riot that took place basically because some trans women of color were daring to, I think it was, like, basically eat lunch in a cafeteria that wouldn't serve them, and they got arrested and they fought back. I obviously need to look more into that. She talked about the multiple waves of the activist movement, the third generation really having a lot to do with HIV and AIDS. I learned a lot about Carol League and Dolores French and the work of sex workers in the early HIV movement and how they really changed the way the whole thing was framed, or at least they were way on the front of it. They were the ones who were talking about how condoms could prevent it, that it wasn't just a thing that happened to groups of people. It was based on behavior, that it was preventable, that they started noticing patterns of specific behaviors that led to infection as opposed to just it being a disease of a group of people. And this, you know, this whole momentum leading all the way up to today and how there's sort of a split in the movement now between the people who are trying to challenge the prison industrial complex, colonialism, and the transphobia of the police state, that sort of radical and Marxist side versus the cultural movement, which is the sex positive movement, which is about making safer space for sex workers. Not that they are at odds necessarily, though, although they might be. So this is sort of a challenge because it can also lead to this idea of carceral feminism, where you're actually making life harder for people by subjecting us to further inquisition from police, further criminalization of behavior by, sort of validating some ideas that the mainstream culture has. So this could lead to, you talk about Slutwalk, for instance, which started in Toronto, where the conference is. And, some people want to talk to the police and train them about how to talk politely and how to engage with protesters and what would be helpful to them. And other people are like, I'm not talking to police. And so we end up with this sort of schism, which let us do greater conversations about what sort of alliances the sex positive movement and people who are interested in sex workers' rights can form. So one of the questions I had was like, is it a good idea to form alliances with perhaps like libertarians or people who are active in drug legalization, because we might have some shared interest, but it might end up being a bad thing because we have other things where we very much disagree. And the point that the presenter made was that, some of the most useful alliances are the ones that you don't expect, that are less obvious. When you form an alliance with someone where you have a more nuanced but important thing in common, and having that big tent idea so we can get more people to show up to our rallies, even if they're over by themselves with just one or two signs, but they're part of the larger thing. So this was part of also a larger conversation on the racism that has historically been in the movement, and the way that, so many radical feminist space have not made themselves inclusive to people of color. And part of what has, been one of the challenges for like the guerrilla, punk scene and that sort of stuff, they weren't trying very hard to be inclusive, and it ended up being one of the reasons that they are no longer, as powerful or as useful or relevant. There was a little bit more talking about the history of the movement and how like Lusty Lady, which is supposed to be a sex positive and feminist space, but they would only allow like one woman of color to work a shift at a time, because more than that would make it be a black space and therefore not as valuable. And to this day, we still see sort of things like that tokenism and that kind of thing. Also talking about how the differing issues of being an immigrant who is a sex worker versus being a trafficked person, and how we need to give more voices to the folks who are in sex work of their own volition, to differentiate how their experience is different and therefore requires a different response than someone who is trafficked. Which also is a very good point made, that trafficking is the source of a lot more domestic labor than of sex work necessarily. Which is a difficult thing to track in general, but that there, even if it were not true, that there's not nearly as big of a humanitarian outcry to outlaw having domestic help in terms of like having people to clean your house or do your yard work. So even if there weren't more of them, there's still not this moralistic outrage about it, which says a lot about our culture's values around sexuality and the motives of the people who might be well-intentioned in fighting sex work to, prevent trafficking, but why they might be sort of mistaken or misguided in their actual motivations.
So it's day two at the Feminist Porn Conference, and I am talking to Addy, who happens to be a love machine, according to his name tag. So what brings you here today?
Dreams coming true, learning, loving, volunteering, just appreciating all the beauty and brilliance that is here.
So it sounds like you had a good time last night. So not only is there like learning, conferencing things going on, but this is a pretty good social scene as well.
I will be dreaming about what happened last night for decades. there are certain moments that a boy has in his heart, and sometimes life is like, here, we're gonna make that happen for you, and then we're gonna add on like six more fantasies and dreams that your imagination was not even capable of seeing will become your reality in your memories. And yeah, it's things happened last night that I love you all. I love you all. I love you all. Super beautiful shout out to April Flores and Courtney Trouble.
Mwah. Oh, that's beautiful. So you're here today, and what like sessions are you looking forward to the most?
There is no most. There is, I wish I could cut my body into three pieces so I could be at three different places at three different times. I'm just absorbing as much information as I can. It's always amazing to hear Tristan speak, though, of course. She's just phenomenal. She's like, I'm sapiosexual over her. And just anything. But definitely seeing Courtney Trouble's keynote address also. Inspiring, and I'm really anticipating that.
Mm-hmm. And so far, has anything been particularly interesting? Any of the sessions that were, you know, new information, mind expanding, anything like that?
Oh, absolutely. There always is. Like, I'm a lover. I'm a passionate person, and I really think sex is the greatest mystery in the world, and everybody's got infinite sexual je ne sais quoi going on inside them. We're all growing and learning and expanding and like contracting and unlearning, and so I never come to these and think, oh, I know everything about everything about everything. Like Danny, oh my God, Danny Wilde yesterday told the most incredible story about men's boundaries in the porn industry and how little they're respected and in heterosexual porn. And there was a beautiful, powerful, amazing conference on just black politics and in the feminist movement, and there's just so much. Getting in and getting out of porn was great. Oh my God, I haven't even like reflected on yesterday's. Yesterday was truly one of the best days of my life. Oh God, I'm just gonna stop there and hold in my pre-cum.
All right, so thanks so much for talking to me.
I love you. Thank you.
And I just want to add in, like, for the people listening, that Addy like made my morning yesterday, because I was a little nervous before I talked, and he was like perfect on the talking me into the right headspace.
Okay,
so
yeah.
I'm very. It's mutual. It's mutual.
Amen. I'm giving you a hug.
Oh, we're hugging. Yeah. We're hugging on radio.
It's so real.
It doesn't make sense.
Feel this hug.
Right now I'm waiting in line for what looks like the most delicious, fantastic spread of food that I've ever seen at a porn convention. And I am now talking with Jasper from Cherry Stumps. So what brings you here today?
Well, this is my first time at the FPAs and at FPCon, but I'm here with Cherry Stumps, which I've just gotten into in the last year, and mostly, and I've known that I've wanted to come to the FPAs for a long time, just to like be around all the babyliness. but this is also turning into, like from an academic perspective, like the kinds of things that are integrated into what I'm studying and what I'm interested in pursuing in like different fields in my life.
So I want to just talk about the babyliness for a moment, because as I walked down this line to get to the back of it, I was like, yep. Yep.
Yeah, there are a lot of babes.
It's like everyone, I'm like, I would like to be your friend. I would like to, et cetera, minimum. Yeah, it's a good time.
Yeah.
It's working out for you.
Oh, it is. Yeah? It very much is. Yep.
So do you want to talk a little bit more about what it is that you're studying and how that connects with this content?
Sure. I study, like, my official degree is in conflict resolution. But I take a pretty broad approach to that. I guess I'm also going to clown school and do a lot of like feminist organizing and sex positive organizing. So it's kind of about like breaking down the status quo boundaries that we use to monitor ourselves and, in this context, like kind of legislate ourselves a little bit, or that are put upon us and legislate us. And I really believe that like breaking down those boundaries is like one of the main routes to freedom, as you might put it. So when it comes to feminist organizing, like sex work and porn is kind of a big deal in that case. And I just got back from the Commission on the Status of Women at the United Nations, and legislation around sex work was one of the main things that was stopping consensus. Like, people weren't able to... the people who were writing the documents, the outcome documents at the UN, weren't able to actually come to consensus around... It was sex work, family planning, and definition of the family. Mm-hmm. I'll grab a plate for you. So it's obviously something that, like, is really important to me to make sure that I know lots about and I'm able to accurately represent in, like, all the other spheres in my life when we're talking about sex work and, like, women's rights, sexual rights, body politics, all those things.
Cool. Just finished the amazing cookie-filled lunch, and now I'm sitting here with... Who am I sitting here with?
John Presick. I'm a local sex radio host, sex writer, and sex editor of the Best Sex series, Best Sex Rating series.
And I'm Mistress Isabel herself. I'm a British dominatrix, and I'm here because I want to meet people like me.
Well, are you going to meet a lot of British dominatrixes? Like, is that going to be a thing? Is that going to happen? Have you run into another one?
We're going to form a little army for your pleasure.
Fantastic. So, what have you enjoyed most about the conference so far?
The award ceremony, first of all, was probably one of the most amazing events I have been to in my life. It was hot and informative and amazing to be in the same room with all these alternative superstars. What have I enjoyed about the conference? I mean, mostly just this huge range of people, all ages, all genders, all races, from all over the country and the states, here to celebrate queer people.
Well, speaking on the ceremony itself, I'm lucky enough to be on the jury the last 2 years that gets to see the film, but we don't make the final decisions that's left. And then to see the films on the screens at the screening and at the awards, that's just amazing. And to see the reaction of the filmmakers and the stars who are awarded is amazing. At the conference, I didn't get to go last year, but this year has been great to be immersed in here and learn from so many people and see the wide variety of topics that are being discussed. The vast array of people who are brought in to speak is fantastic. And being in Toronto, being, you know, Toronto born and bred pretty much, there wasn't anything like this for a long time. Toronto has a great sex positive culture that has been smaller, Good For Her, Comes You Are, all kinds of places like this, but now with the awards and 9 years going on and the conference in its second year are bringing these people to Toronto, which is just amazing considering a decade ago it just was not happening. Now it is, and it's a great opportunity to see so many different things happening here.
What sessions are you most looking forward to today?
One with Gallivanting, who I am such a big fan of, consent and authenticity. So they're going to be talking about what is real porn. That's a kind of a term that's used a lot in porn. It's 100% real live amateurs. And they'll talk about how to make that ethical. So I'm dead keen for that.
I'm really undecided. I really leave the decision to, like, the last second. And then it's like, well, this one or this one, I don't know. I'm still deciding between porn stars deserving privacy is a really hot topic, a really big topic that's being discussed. And consent and authenticity, that's another one. There's a lot of ones with masochistic femininity and feminist kink porn. Big fan of Madison Young, so that would be another one. So... really everything and then just deciding at the last second, pretty much like a Price is Right type of thing of door number one, door number two, door, and just walking into one and gonna have a good experience at any of them.
So the privacy issue is really interesting, like and I don't think that that's just exclusive to porn stars either. Like, how does privacy play into your work and what you do in sexuality?
I am becoming increasingly out about what I do, mostly because of how huge the community is in Toronto. I can introduce myself as a dom, and people don't bat an eye. I've told my mum, and she is really behind me on it. She got me a little kinky boot style nail set for Christmas. She's, like, really on it. So, but in terms of privacy, I guess I'm not a very private person. I like to discuss in detail the things that I do.
Well, I'm in an interesting kind of crossroads because my actual profession is probably winding up. It's becoming one of those professions that is becoming obsolete. I'm a typesetter. I've worked in book publishing for years. Book publishers are shrinking. Bookstores are shrinking. I can envision within a couple years. We're transitioning to web stuff, but I can envision within a couple years that I might not have a job. That said, for 15 or more years, actually, I've been writing about sex, broadcasting about sex, doing all this thing under my name, 100% my name. And now I realize that if I'm going to continue the other career, then what's the first thing any job, any employer is going to do? Is Google my name and see the articles and books about anal sex and masturbation and Sex City radio show and blogs and things like that. So right now I'm putting a lot of thought into how I can actually just, can I transition right out of that work and into this work fully, so that it's not an issue anymore. And I like my name, and I always wanted my name out there. Call me a bit of a glory hog or fame whore, whatever you want. That's what I wanted, was my name. Back then, it wasn't a concern. So, yeah, I'm really interested in this privacy thing. This whole James Franco thing that happened this in the last few days. You didn't hear about this? James Franco flirting with a 17-year-old on Instagram, and it going out and viral, even though she said she is Scottish and she was visiting New York, and she said she was not yet 18 and she was there with her parents and he was asking if he should rent a room. So privacy, Instagram, should that have even gotten out? Is it worth getting out because he's James Franco, he's 35 years old and he's flirting with a 17-year-old? These are issues that are happening. It's internet, social media, all that is going to really continue. And porn stars are obviously affected by this significantly. The whole Bell Knox situation is first and foremost in that. How she, you know, just whether or not anyone should have outed her at Duke University, or whether it matters that she's a porn star / student. It's a big topic. It's a big topic.
I've been to so many interesting sessions today. It's been incredibly helpful. And one of the things that the interviewees to which I've spoken, the things that they keep saying is that it's impossible to decide which sessions to go to. A lot of them are leaving it to the very last moment and letting, you know, what they're standing next to decide where they're going to go, because everything is so good. And so many people keep echoing that statement of, I wish I could go to all of these. And, you know, recordings not allowed, so that's not going to be possible to see everything, which is part of why I was live tweeting the whole thing. So, you know, certainly if you want to go back, I was definitely recording that. I just came from a few different really good sessions. Jizzly and Chris Lowrance did a session called builditandthewill.com, which is about website development and people in the adult industry. It was really helpful, definitely much more helpful if you're in the adult industry, but it was like a really good primer in website stuff and domains and hosting and doing e-commerce, and how things are different if you are in an adult industry, because there are certainly legal ramifications for that. And one of the big takeaways was, don't use PayPal, because it's against their terms of service to do anything adult. And if they find out that you're doing that, they will not only freeze your account, but they will keep your money. There is some legalese you can possibly say to get them to undo it, but that might be outside of the realm of your possibility. There was an attendee who said she had a letter that she could forward to others that might be helpful for them as well. There was also just some conversation about good customer service, you know, because
you know, in our feminist porn industry, you might be the only one doing the tech for your company, or there might just be a very small handful of you. And people may not understand that when they write in with their tech questions about videos not playing and things happening. And so it was just real basic customer service and how to maintain a website sort of stuff. Very helpful. I would definitely recommend contacting Chris Lawrence, Lowrance, with any questions if you are a person to whom that is applicable. The final session I went to today was about consent and authenticity, which was really very theoretical and interesting, and about realness in porn and how that has become, I guess, sort of trendy, because amateur porn is really interesting to people and they want to see real sex and they want to see real people. But quite often, you know, if somebody's making the porn, it's not just like two people grab their phones and film their sex. I mean, that certainly happens. But this is now a model of profitability. If you are a porn-making company and you find that people want and will pay for videos of real people having real sex, and you can replicate that process, then you will. And you will find these specific types of performers that fit into that template of realness, which was listed by Gala Vanting, who was Skyping in from Australia. She was describing the real girl wearing a button-down dress, a cotton skirt, white brief underwear, not having any accessories. She has multiple orgasms. She's usually white. She's a small size. She's between 18 and 30, and she's not a sex worker. So those are things that make a real woman. And real sex is effortless, and it follows a pretty specific template. It's orgasmic, and it's ultimately the same thing as a scripted porn. It's just that it's these people are conventionally attractive, but not augmented. So they don't have big fake tits, but they're still quite attractive in very conventional sense. They're still not going to have blemishes and bruises and big scars, but they're also not going to have, you know, silicone lips. So it's just a different standard, a different expectation for appearance. And so as this is becoming a profit-driven model, it's actually, you know, good to be aware of what is realness then in porn. Sophie DeLancey, who makes mostly couples-oriented porn, blowjob-related, was talking about real sex and real people also. And the idea there that real people are not career porn stars and they are doing it for the love of sex, and again, conventionally beautiful, but they're allowed some flaws. This also has to do with like a lack of direction in the shooting, which makes it seem more authentic. And she talked about how she worked with a specific couple for a long time in her first job, this website. And so, you know, they're a real couple, but they may not always feel like, you know, having super specifically romantic sex. They might not be getting along. They might just be having a bad day. And so still having to put on a performance, even though they might be in love and in a relationship. So again, real sex and authentic emotion. And it's a hard line to differentiate between fiction and nonfiction. It was really the point that she was trying to make. Madison Young, who is herself a porn performer, was writing about how to do porn in an authentic and healthy way, which started from the beginning with why would you want to document your sex life? And she pointed out that we document every other facet of our lives. We tweet our food and every place that we go and our friends and the drinks that we have. And sexuality is obviously a very important thing to us. Why would we not want to document that? And also, why would we not want to share that with the world? Like, we should eradicate the shame about it. So she also talked about the complications with it, both personal and professional, and, you know, advocating for yourself and being aware of what boundaries you should have and making sure that you are expressing your desires and getting your partner's desires fully expressed and negotiating things ahead of time and having personal space and having a personal life
where there's a part of you that's not at all consumable to anyone else. And she's very much into negotiating things ahead of time and talking about them afterwards, meeting up after you've done a scene to discuss how it went, how you feel about it, and going forward. She has been shooting with, among other people, her partner for the last 9 years. She's been in the industry for about 12. She's been documenting her sex life for about 12 years. And she pointed out that anytime you open yourself up, anytime you're really real and vulnerable, that you're going to feel. And that is both really amazing and can be very stinging. So you open yourself up to criticism. Anytime you're public and honest about any part of yourself, with sex, it's especially true because people have a lot of projections that they want to put on you because they have their own shit is fucked up. So she talked about how it's also much easier in the feminist porn scene than in mainstream sex to really have these negotiated conversations and making sure that everyone's needs are met and that sort of thing. So she thinks that it's important that you have a personal mission statement before you even start out. So you know what you are in this for, what you're hoping to get out of it. So you know when that's happening and when that's definitely not. Finally on the panel was Pandora Blake, who is fantastic. She's super interesting to me. And she was also interesting on the porn panel because she represents porn that doesn't actually have any fucking in it. She does kink that's mostly spanking. And she was specifically talking about on this panel how to negotiate non-consensual fantasies into porn. So this came into, you know, into her world. It's interesting because, you know, BDSM is very heavily negotiated. It's very much about consent. But in the course of a film where it's, you know, it's a fiction and it's a fantasy, that's why people are watching it, to break the fourth wall and to talk in front of the audience about that negotiation, about that consensual stuff, would take people out of the fantasy. So how do you do that? There's a few different ways to go around it. She talked about some people, what they'll do is they'll show the negotiation scene in interviews before or after the actual BDSM scene, or what she does is use the outtakes, the bloopers, the, you know, the things that happened after cut, so you can see what was happening as opposed to just, you know, they're continuing to act, but you can actually read their body language and get a sense. Plus she encourages and allows and etc. her performers to, you know, tweet and blog about their experiences, you know, outside of when they're getting paid, you know, so they can reflect on whatever their experience was, positive, negative, mixed, etc. She also raised a really interesting point that, like, not all porn has to have a happy ending. That in real life, you know, not everything does, and that it can be very interesting and fulfilling to see a powerful character who survives but doesn't necessarily win, and that those sort of complexities and those nuances are explored in other genres of film, you know, like a drama, but it's not allowed in porn. There has to be happy resolution. So perhaps going forward, we have, you know, more exploration of the art itself by having this, you know, this variation. She also talked about how marketing can be done in a respectful way. So rather than, you know, acting like the performers were surprised when they show up on set and they didn't know what was going to happen and, oh God, she didn't know what was waiting for her. Instead, it's about, you know, she rose to the challenge and she was a total pro. And that's the way you would market it rather than making them act like they were stupid or that it was, you know, wasn't a consensual experience or that sort of thing. So viewers need to be able to see all this in the context in which it's produced. So if you know that a production company is an ethical porn maker, that it's all very much consensual, that's important to know as opposed to just finding clips online and you don't know who made it and you don't really know how it was made and that sort of thing. So a little bit of onus on the viewers to get some research into whatever they're into as well.
Holy cats, we just had this like amazing keynote. The energy is out of control. And now I am really excited to talk to Sophie DeLancey. How are you feeling right now?
Very pumped up, definitely. Courtney's keynote just kind of made me think of a lot of things that I can be doing to change and better the porn I make.
So speaking of the porn that you make, What do you make now? Who do you work for? Do you work on your own?
So my main day job is I work with the Art of Blow Job. I started off doing PR marketing, and now I'm vice president and also doing some directing, some casting. So kind of all over the place. And then I also work with an organization called The Spit Magazine, thespitmagazine.com and theartofblowjob.com. And The Spit Magazine is a local Toronto organization, community-oriented, kind of a collective of people who like having sex on film and people who like filming that sex. And it's been a really fun few months, and I've been shooting, and I also performed in my first scene. So slowly getting into behind the camera and in front of the camera, not just the administrative and academic side.
So what inspired you to go from one side of the camera to the other?
It's just really exciting, and being lucky to live in Toronto and to work in Montreal, which are two areas that have a great sex-positive community, and, of course, the Feminist Porn Awards and now the Feminist Porn Conference, it's just kind of intoxicating as an atmosphere, and the more you hear people talking about the politics and the personal aspects of making porn, the more it makes you want to get involved in all aspects.
So speaking of the keynote, what resonated for you? What stuck out?
Well, with the Art of Blowjob specifically, it's we were just one couple for a really long time, so we didn't have to include or exclude anything because it was just one couple and that's it. But in the past few months, we've changed to a multi-model format, and this has just reminded me that we shouldn't use any excuses in terms of hiring the people we do, and we should be not only looking around Montreal, but doing the best we can to find a diverse group of people, sizes and races and gender representations to appear on film. And we should get more creative with it. And I think this is something very inspiring. And it's Sunday evening already, so Monday morning, I think I'm going to have a lot of stuff to get cracking on for work.
So when you first went into the industry, did you go into it thinking that it was a feminist act to do so? Was that an intentional thing? Is that just a facet of you? How did the two relate?
Definitely. I mean, basically, this was my first job out of university, and I saw the ad on Craigslist, and I had a background in, I studied some feminist studies at university. I actually studied opera primarily, but I was an active feminist. I was an active porn consumer, and so 3 days after my last exam, when I got the interview to work with this company, I made sure that they were supportive of feminist issues, that they identified their work as feminist, and from there, very quickly, it just took off, and we continued to really put the feminist aspect of the porn we make, even though it's not stereotypically feminist, as some would imagine it, at the forefront.
So when you are on the backside of the production, the more admin side as opposed to performance, how much do you shape what happens on screen?
Well, for a really long time, it was just the couple, so they kind of just shot their own stuff. And to a certain extent, I would give them some feedback or some suggestions sometimes, but really it was mostly them. Now that I have a bit more of an active role, and that's really just been over the past few months, I get to think a bit more about what we're doing in terms of representation, how we're portraying the sex acts we focus on, what we can look to for future websites. So hopefully eventually we'll be moving past just blowjobs and on to other types of pleasure which focus on more than just oral penis gratification.
So do you get much feedback from your customers about, you know, who is watching and what it is that they like about the porn that you make?
Definitely. We have a very wide selection of audience, everything from, you know, single male 18-year-olds who this is their first exposure to porn, the first time they bought porn, to lovely empty nester couples who are rediscovering their sexuality. And it's been really nice to get the feedback about what they think, because I mean, yes, they're blowjobs, and yes, that's exciting, but I think what a lot of people are looking for is high-quality filmmaking and something that doesn't make them feel uncomfortable, doesn't make them feel that the blowjob is autopilot or being phoned in, or that the people giving the blowjobs aren't as enthusiastic as the people receiving it. Because, I mean, you like what you like, and we're catering to a specific niche, which is blowjobs, but they're not rough, they're not, I mean, consensual degradation is great, but we're providing an alternative that focuses on kind of the pleasure of giving pleasure, the enjoyment of the sensuality of oral sex, and it's nice to serve that market.
So where can people find out more about you and about your work?
Well, so the main site is theartofblowjob.com, and then if you want to see my boobs, that is thespitmagazine.com, and I'm mostly on Twitter at Sophie Delancey, and you can find The Art of Blowjob and The Spit Magazine on Twitter as well, at The Art of Blowjob, at The Spit Magazine.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, thank you for talking to me.
Great. Thank you so much.
So now I'm speaking with one of the presenters who I watched earlier. This is Chris Lawrence. What brought you here today?
Hi, I'm the web manager for Pink and White Productions, and I also like freelance build websites mostly for the queer community and for the sex work community. And I was asked to come give a presentation with Jiz Lee on basically how to build a porn site, like just the very basics of it, because we've had a lot of people come to us telling us these horror stories of trying to find a developer that would work with sex workers, and they were getting ripped off. They were finding these most developers would say, no, I don't want to do that. They'd find somebody sketchy on Craigslist. They didn't know a lot about what they needed and didn't need, and then they would be out thousands, maybe even $10,000. So we realized there's a real need to at least give people the basic like understanding of what goes into a website, what to be prepared for, that sort of thing.
So it's interesting because your technical knowledge means that you have employability in kind of whatever field you would want to. What draws you to this area specifically?
There's a sense of personal freedom, certainly. Like, as a queer person, I don't have to hide who I am when I deal with this community. Also, just the sense of accomplishment when I do work here. I feel so good about what I've done at the end of the day compared to when I sort of jokingly call muggle clients or like doctors and things like that. I don't really get the same feeling when I have finished a site for one of them that I do from when, I've helped a sex worker develop a really great website that's going to help them really revolutionize the work that they do. And also just, I've had clients treat me poorly. I've had clients that ripped me off or like wasted my time or whatever. Never has that happened from people in porn. Never has that happened from sex workers. Never has that happened to me from the queer community. That's always the wealthy, usually white professionals that abuse me as a creator and as a, developer. Working for this community, they're the greatest people to work with. Like, because everybody sort of understands what it's like. And yeah, it's just, I couldn't really imagine doing anything else at this point. And at this point, I've been so open about doing this kind of work, I probably couldn't do. I don't have a lot to show on my resume that's not, for a porn site or for sex workers, so.
Is there any distance, though, that you feel? Some people have discussed so far the privilege of different places along the spectrum in sex work, like, for instance, burlesque over stripping,
right,
etc.
Right.
Do you feel any of that as a person who is not, I don't know if you're performing also, but do you feel any of that because you have this perceived distance from the work itself?
No, people are generally very understanding. I've not been in front of the camera and I've not performed, or at least not yet. Like, I always keep that as a possibility. But, and do you mean in terms of, like, people that have done sex work sort of looking down on me, or?
I was thinking more along, just, because you're around it, but you not necessarily experiencing the same thing. You have a different experience.
Right.
And I just don't, I don't know enough about your experience or the experiences of the people that you work with to know how different they are, is really what
right.
I'm asking.
Well, yeah, it's something that I always keep in mind, is that I do have a lot of privilege. Like, your listeners can't tell, but I am a cisgendered white man, and, I try to stay cleanly aware of that, and also I haven't done sex work. So even though, I do have a bit of stigma to deal with now because of the work I do that's on my resume, I took that on, like, I knew that going in, like, and it's still nowhere near if I had actually done sex work myself. So usually what, it's on me to sort of keep in mind that I'm usually the person with privilege in the interaction, and, to do my best to pretty much what I'm doing, really, because I'm wielding a lot of my privilege to try and help, because, you know, it's a lot easier for a white guy to learn tech skills just because the opportunities are presented to them. They're told from a young age that it's possible, whereas other people are discouraged. I guess I'm just trying to do the best I can to...
So you provided a whole lot of different resources in your session. What would you just, right off the top of your head, recommend to somebody listening who might be in sex work in some capacity, who's trying to build a website, trying to build a web presence, could in some way help or be helped by your expertise? What advice would you give them?
Look at what else is out there. Look at other sites that are doing... Even if you have some revolutionary idea, look at somebody that's doing something similar to it. Find their contact info, because a lot of times they will gladly recommend whoever helped them set that up, or they will advise you. Most of the people in, especially the queer porn community, are very open with each other about, there's not a lot of like trade secrets and that sort of thing. So just look for examples of what you want to do, and never be afraid to just ask. Just ask for help, ask for advice, ask for people to point you towards what you want to do.
So if somebody is looking to hire you, they want to contact you, they have more questions, how can they reach you?
They can reach me. I'm on Twitter at Chris Lawrence. It's Chris, Lowrance. My website is lawrancecreative.com. And you can also email me at chris@chrislawrance.net.
I just want to talk a little bit about the keynote by Courtney Trouble. And this will be the closing part of this episode, because it's me recording this now to talk to you about it is going to be my debriefing of the experience. I've been to a lot of sex-related things in my life, conferences, events, performances, etc. And it's not often that I'm brought to tears. And that happened during Courtney Trouble's keynote. And it happened to her, too. She was she definitely got moved by the content that she was discussing. It was radical, political, and completely a good use of a keynote address. It was fantastic. So if you're not already familiar with Courtney Trouble, she is a porn performer and porn director who has broken many boundaries by making curvy plus size lesbian films, by making films that feature trans people having sex in the middle of Dyke March, and winning tons of awards and having some commercial success that people never expected. One of the really big takeaways that I got from this was that, you know, if you make the porn that you want to make that fulfills your desires and the desires of your friends and the people that you know, it doesn't matter if you're reaching that target demographic of white cis men who are supposed to be the ones that pay for porn. Because the point she made is that if you make good porn, they will find it. You know, everybody who needs to find it will, but also so will these people who didn't know that they did, and they can learn a lot from the experience of finding out that there's more things that are sexy than they might have known before, and they might be surprised at their own reactions and how it opens them up and liberates them and changes their perceptions. Sexuality has this radical capacity to really change people's lives, and so, you know, we want to make the porn that would have been helpful for us to have stumbled upon as kids. Whatever your first experience was with porn, you know, it makes sort of a lasting impression, because it's like your template, it's your introduction to what it's like, what it's all like, what all sex is like. And, you know, it can be really huge for a young queer person, a trans person of color, of size, etc., to see representations of themselves as sexual and as able to experience pleasure and as being attractive and those sort of things. The whole speech was amazing. She talked incredibly quickly because she had so much to say, and it was impossible to keep up with in its entirety. I hope that she posts it somewhere. Courtney Triple is very present on the internet and Tumblr, and she's got multiple websites where you can find out about her. I really hope she posts the whole keynote somewhere that you can check it out. Some of the really important bits that I hope to take away from it. She talks about how it is not acceptable for porn people to be honest. They're not supposed to talk about, you know, their whatever bad things have happened in their past, including being survivors of sexual assault, because that is fuel for the fire that says porn is objectifying and victimizing women, and that it's an undignified profession for broken women, is the term that she used. But in reality, sexual assault is something to happen to a significant percentage of people, up to 20-25% of people in general, yet only about 2,000 women try porn in a given year professionally. So that's sort of like specious reasoning. And it's further exploitation of women to say that they can't make their own choices. And she points out that it's not porn that degrades and objectifies women necessarily. It's society in general, that the whole world does it to women. And porn is just one place where the world manifests on film. And so all the different types of porn that exist, you know, depict the different ways in which women exist. And so that's part of why we want to make good sex-positive porn. It's the stigma, it's the criminalization, it's the discrimination, it's the harassment, it's the getting doxxed, being outed on the internet, having your legal name blown up, having your class schedule posted for people, having your family members' information put up online to harass you. Those are the things that hurt prostitutes and sex workers and pornographers and porn stars, not necessarily the porn work itself. So she talked about how she was sick of being silenced, and she wanted to enable a culture of consent, and that every person who was there was important, and we all contributed different pieces. It was a very important piece that she talked about, people of color, and the fact that she was a white, cis, you know, binary-rejecting woman whose ancestors came from Europe and was on a land that she didn't know its origins of, and that was important, and that she was using her keynote, you know, to talk about stuff that was important to her, but by her being up there, it took the place of someone from a marginalized population, a person of color, a trans person, etc., who had important things to say that were not getting heard, that they could have had it. So she actually had a point where she said, I would like to just step back, and if there are any people of color who would like to share their truth, or even just introduce themselves and say that we exist and we're here. So that happened. She did that, and people did. They stood up and introduced themselves, or in some cases spoke about, you know, the importance of this message, that the exclusion of people of color and of trans people from the porn industry and even the feminist porn industry is really hurtful and it's bad and we need to change it. So it was a really significant part after that that Courtney went into how we all can contribute to this. And if you're making porn, that it is your responsibility to find queer people, trans people, people of color to be included. And if you can't find them, then you should stop making porn for a while, because that's, you know, not helping. You're just contributing more to the existing ideas. And she gave a lot of ideas away. She said that, you know, she's just so filled with ideas. And so she rattled off this amazing list of ways in which every person can help, talking about local obscenity laws and how you should know the loopholes, and you should come up with a local feminist porn blog and then continuously update it and rate it, that you can make, you know, your own porn that's a heterosexual porn featuring a trans woman performer, but don't even mention the fact that she's trans. Just make the porn and don't, you know, tag it as anything special. Run for office. Do an entire scene without anybody taking off their clothes. Design a college course that untrains students from all these hegemonic power ideas. One of the really, just to go back to, one of the things that she talked about repeatedly was the fact that, like, her size should not make her special in this industry. She shouldn't be a fetish. She's not a niche. That her, she's a porn star and she's a perfect body, as is everybody else there, and that this fat exclusion is born entirely out of misogyny and trying to tell girls what they can and can't look like, and they need to take up less space, and they need to conform, and they need to center their lives around making a specific type of person happy and attracted to them. So also, you know, reiterating the idea that we need to include more people of size all the time, and to not necessarily label the porn as being about that, just include them and make that a completely acceptable, normal part of the porn that you make. She went on to say that you should fight to keep fisting and squirting and menstrual blood and other bodily functions in porn films that make them real, to create more positive role models, so that for this, you know, this fight against you know, people who want to tell us to hate ourselves and loathe ourselves for what we really are and to conform to this idea of what we should be, we need to fight back by creating stars out of people who show different types of beauty, that we should pay for porn at least sometimes, to tell your friends about your relationship to porn, leave some porn out, you know, for them to see on your coffee table. Understand that gender neutral pronouns are just as important as gendered ones and are just as optional. To write letters to mainstream porn producers and tell them when they're doing fucked up stuff. Tell them not to use offensive terms. And this is especially important for people who aren't relying upon those mainstream porn production companies for their living. We can't just leave it up to the feminist porn people to do it, because tethering, you know, to each other might be a way of sustaining that feminist porn being made. And if you get called out, to own that, to not blame call-out culture, to not call a marginalized person defensive because, you know, defense is reacting to offense, and to own that you are capable of making mistakes, to shoot a film from the point of view of a woman, to support performers by not giving them unsolicited advice or questioning their judgment, or by judging them and their choices, and even if you don't think that it looks particularly feminist. To fight back against sexism and racism and rape culture wherever you see it, wherever that might be, to let people know that they're being held accountable for that stuff. And again, to make the porn that you wish you could have found when you were a teenager. It went on from there, and at some point, I definitely started crying. I don't exactly remember when. It was just incredibly powerful to hear someone just say this stuff out loud that, like, to me seems so, just so really true. And it was really nice to be in this space with all these people who I could tell all got it, and to not, for, you know, just for 2 days, to just be away from the devil's advocates who think that we haven't heard the contrary position, who think that it would just be helpful to point out all of the stupid hegemonic patriarchal shit that, yeah, we're totally familiar with. Thank you, dude. And to be with people that were friendly and so bloody polite. Like, there was so much concern with, like, you know, if you needed to walk past somebody and, you know, step over a bag, everyone was really nice about it. And we also knew that we could just, like, leave our stuff in a room and walk away and it would still be there. And it was just so friendly and ethical and kind, and everyone cleaned up after themselves and recycled. And everyone had cool hair. And it was just really nice. And I strongly encourage anyone who listened to this episode, who felt any sort of way about it, to go to the next one, to support the next one. The conference this year was evidently exponentially larger than the previous one, which was only 1 day long. So let's keep growing it. Let's keep supporting it financially and with our attendance. So again, if you feel any sort of way about it, definitely consider coming next year. And thank you to everybody who organized it and made it possible to meet some really cool people and to learn some stuff and just be surrounded by this energy, which was so incredibly positive and affirming, and showed that it's really possible in the world
to have this be reality. So thank you very much for listening, and have a good day.
We here at Sex with Timmery are all about making your life, your sex life, your relationships the best they can possibly be. And one way we can help you is actually finding like-minded folks or someone who's interesting to you or wants to do similar things that you want to do. So one option of forget Tinder and just moving to the right over and over again, you can place a personal ad on the Sex with Timmery podcast and reach tens of thousands of sex positive, smart, interesting people around the world, and for a very low price, $20. So if you are interested in posting a personal ad, you can either send us your audio or you can send the text and I can read it for you if you're a little bit scared. Email me, sexwithtimmery@gmail.com.
If you like Sex with Timmery, then you should totally check out Burlesque Toy Shop. Explore the fine line between pleasure and play and power and submission with Burlesque Toy Shop's A Little Kink collection. Our sex and mischief bed bondage restraints are the perfect foray into the world of dominance and submission. Turn your bed into a bondage playground with this accessibly priced kit for only $29.99. No bedpost required. Watch your lover surrender, bound by four soft but secure Velcro cuffs attached to adjustable straps. An additional connecting strip ensures that the bed bondage restraints will fit any size bed. At Burlesque Toy Shop, we encourage you to test your boundaries safely and live out your fantasies fully. Burlesque Toy Shop provides an expertly curated collection of pleasure toys and burlesque-inspired lingerie for the discerning lady and gentleman. With 100% body-safe products, elegantly designed toys, and glycerin and paraben-free lubes, Burlesque is the toy shop you wish you had next door, but instead, it's online. Use the code TIMARE, T-I-M-A-R-E-E, for 20% off your total purchase. So again, use the code TIMARE, T-I-M-A-R-E-E, when you visit burlesquetoyshop.com. And Burlesque Toy Shop is social, so follow on Twitter at Burlesque Toys for sexy news, hot tips, giveaways, and even better discounts. Help them out for helping us out. Thank you for listening to Sex with Timmery. Sex with Timmery, the podcast, is produced by Nathan Karuna. Our opening music is by Charles Evans. Our closing music is by Hanya Lee. Be sure to check out sexwithtimmery.com, Sex with Timmery on Facebook, and tweet at me, Timmery_LEIGH. If you're a fan of the show, if you like it at all, a little bit maybe even, rate and review us on iTunes and tell your friends all about it. And thank you.
Hello, podcast fans. Adam Carolla here. I'm leading the fight against patent trolls who are threatening this medium. It's not about me. It's about the podcast you're listening to right now. If I go down, this show could be next. Visit fundanything.com/patent troll for more information on how you can keep podcasting alive. Thank you, and mahalo.